Hey everybody, it's Jason. So you may have noticed if you follow any of my three regular podcasts, I've got this one, Comedy on Vinyl, I've got Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, and I've got Dispatches from Fort Awesome, the news radio podcast. There's been a bit of a gap, and that's over the last few weeks, and we have some very great, wonderful, loyal listeners, so loyal that nobody gave me any crap about missing a ton of episodes. I'm way behind, and frankly, it's just for personal reasons. Number one is, actually, I can't remember the first thing. Things have been piling up so much, but the second thing is, and honestly most important, is that there's an animal, a cat named Lulu, you would have heard on the podcast over the last 6 years. Her meows were persistent, and she was persistent with a lot of our guests. You might even hear her on this episode, I don't know. She passed away, and that's, you know, frankly, that was just a big part of my life, and it's been very sad and difficult to deal with. And then on top of that, as I was getting ready to kind of get back on the podcast train, Fort Awesome Studios is here in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. And if you were paying attention to the news in this part of the world, there were some very big wildfires this last weekend and was kind of in emergency get ready mode. Luckily for us, knock wood, fingers crossed and everything, the fires did not come this far, and I've been reassured by several people that I was being silly for preparing, but, you know, that's fine. So anyway, all is safe, all is well, just playing a lot of catch-up. To that end, I am staring down the barrel of this not including this episode, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more episodes that need to be cut and have been sitting there for months. And that's, you know, just to a huge backlog, and then things just piled one on top of the other. So, to make it easier on me and so that I can actually try and put these out maybe a little more frequently than just one a week, I am going to not be putting in clips in these shows for a while. So I'm just going to, the whole point of this is really for you to hunt down these albums in the first place. So, you don't need me to tell you that they're funny. You're going to listen to the person that I'm interviewing. And, I think everybody makes a very good case, with one exception coming up, actually two exceptions where we don't necessarily say, listen to the album, but it's definitely interesting if you do end up listening to it. So, you know, there are exceptions. Also, the Comedy Album A Day thing, I have been playing catch up very slowly, but, you know, super, super far behind. Hope we make it to 365 by the end of the year, but I'm going to be frank with you. You listen to that many comedy albums, they kind of start to run together. So that's been part of the experiment, is figuring out what that means. I love comedy albums, but when you're exhausted by them and a lot of them just aren't good, you know, what do you do? What do you say? I'm always going to love vinyl comedy, but, you know, so, a lot of little things in the way. I have spoken for long enough, but we're not going to be doing clips in the shows from now on for the foreseeable future. Some point maybe we'll get back into them, but I need to, you know, get these episodes out to you guys. And because of all the things that happened, I canceled a recording of about a dozen podcasts. So got another dozen that are going to end up being in the can. So enjoy those. You know, check out the Comedy Album A Days I have done. And also, if you've listened this far, thank you. Go to stolendress.com/celerysound. That's my new sketch comedy record label. We might do some stuff other than sketch, but not at the moment. So we just re-released my album from 2001, Shoestrings, with Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, my comedy group, my best friend Dan, and just re-released it with some extra bonus tracks, some very goofy, fun stuff. And we're also now distributing the wonderful vinyl-only album, A Gift You Didn't Ask For, from Friends You Never Had, which is so much fun. It's only $20. We don't get a dime of it. It goes right to the artists, Jared Jeffries and Peyton Brown. We just believe in it, and it's a lot of fun. There we are. That's all the front-loading I need to do for now. So just keep it in mind. Let me know what you think. You know, feel free. And please enjoy this episode with Seth Morris. It was so much fun, and he's very patient to wait for it to come out. Thank you guys for listening. I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Hi, everybody. Jason Klom. Welcome to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. No year, no album specifically, but the group we're talking about is Coil and Sharp, and my guest is Seth Morris. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, you're a San Franciscan.
Mm-hmm.
Should be no surprise that the only other person who ever picked Coyle and Sharp, but we didn't get to talk about it, was Jesse Thorne.
Oh, really? How come I knew he was a fan.
He is absolutely a fan, and I know that he interviewed them way back in the day and like helped get their stuff like released online, but he ended up picking Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, okay.
And it might have been at the time because it was just at the cusp of YouTube letting me watch and listen to stuff I wanted to.
I think he's inadvertently responsible for me hearing about them.
Okay.
Because, so I was introduced to them through Matt Walsh of the UCB in like 97 or 98.
Okay.
When Henry Rollins had contacted Coyle and Sharp, or they're surviving Mal Sharp, and wanted to put some lost recordings or something like that together on his label.
Okay.
And Walsh knew about it, and I think Jesse ended up either introducing Walsh to it, or they met on a panel where they discussed it or something like that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So down the line.
Well, that's great. I'm glad we get to talk about it, because maybe some people haven't heard of them, and
we'll get
hip to it.
Well, and it's, I don't know that there, I mean, other than like your Robin Williams, I don't know that there are a whole lot of acts that stand out as significantly San Francisco to the point that they're in the streets of San Francisco doing their comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah. And I think another one I may have heard, I used to hear Mal Sharp, because he ended up, you know, these guys have an interesting history about, which we could talk about later, I guess, but where Jim Coyle, he ended up just kind of being done with the comedy business. And I'm always fascinated with people who's like, meh, I get it, I've had enough. And didn't, you know, because there's so many people who just will not leave no matter what.
Sure.
And the people who, not just out of frustration, but just out of like, there's other things I could do with my life and move on to other pursuits. So he kind of went into obscurity, but Mal Sharp was a Bay Area kind of fixture as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, it was actually KGO, I think, the radio station that originally hired them in the 60s, would late at night play just comedy clips.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd play Mal Sharp, they'd play non-San Francisco stuff. So.
Sure.
It's also, that was another place I was introduced to comedy in general.
See, this is something that I'm going to bring it up because I do every time. When people got to listen to comedy on radio, I didn't have, I grew up in upstate New York, so rural.
Yeah.
So not a San Francisco upbringing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking great.
It was cool. And I'm pretty sure it was one of these things where the local TV weatherman had a show on this AM radio station.
Okay.
And he, which blew my mind, where I was like, he's on both things. Like, I had no idea that you could kind of cross platform like that. And clearly he was some sort of comedy nerd, because he would just do, and it was only like a half hour. It could have been an hour. But, you know, like Henny Youngman, really racist jokes.
Of course, of course.
But just little clips. And it was so cool. I love not only that idea, but Coyle and Sharp themselves, when they were originally on the radio, it was like how you hear about these from the 70s, these kind of local monster movie TV shows like Elvira and things like, where they just started, there's these little regional snippets, you know, that were specific to that place. So it was really neat. I didn't quite appreciate it fully at that time. They'd also play at that same KGO, they'd late at night just play radio dramas and mysteries and stuff, which is amazing.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, that was really cool.
So Coyle and Sharp, so do you think you did hear, like maybe heard but didn't know who they were?
I think I heard Mal Sharp, actually.
Oh, you heard, I heard Mal Sharp. Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And then I really got exposed to Coyle and Sharp in like the late 90s. And it's so funny because, so I was in this sketch group called Naked Babies, and it was like Rob Corddry and Brian Husky and John Ross Bowie. Bowie's done this, right?
He has not.
Okay.
No.
All of those guys would be great for this. But anyway, I remember all of us being introduced to this and listening to it and influencing us and laughing. And when you were asking about this podcast, I was trying to remember the name of the album, and I emailed those guys and I was like, what, do you guys remember this? We all used to laugh at this, and none of them remembered it. I was like, I guess I was the only one. Maybe we didn't listen to it together.
Right.
But I have these fond memories of sitting around together laughing about it.
It feels like the kind of thing, though, it would have been passed around on cassette tapes too. You know what I mean? Like, it's got that feel, because like, even if you listen to the stuff that's officially released, it's crunchy as shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good sounding because they're literally on the street.
Yeah.
I'm realizing we've yet to actually define what they did.
Right.
For the most part, these guys would go on the street, do the kind of thing that I guess you might later associate with a Jay Leno or now Jimmy Kimmel, where they go out on the street, or Dave Letterman. Let's talk about David Letterman. There's a classic version of it. You go out on the street, interview people, and get them to answer questions that they probably shouldn't be answering.
I would say even more, they were more like Sacha Baron Cohen or somebody like Christopher Morris or somebody like that, where they would just come out in the 60s. And a lot of it, first they had a tape recorder hidden in a briefcase. So some of those qualities are
amazing.
Are terrible. But then eventually when they got their radio show, they just posed as newsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a microphone. And they would do these elaborate, just sort of psychological pranks on people. Sometimes it would be physical, like trying to get somebody to go rob a bank in the name of, well, we're going to film this movie. Do you want to be in a movie? Sure. Okay, well, you're going to play the bank robber. Oh, great. Okay, so we want this to be really, you know, and it goes from that. But a lot of it is just sort of, what do you think about this idea?
Mm-hmm.
And then they would get it sort of active and like, well, come with us. And there it was, I guess, mid to late 60s. And one of the things I love about it is, A, it's just funny in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
but it's this little snapshot into that time period for a lot of reasons, because they're dealing with a lot of scientific stuff. Clearly, uh-huh. they're processing a lot of the weird scientific breakthroughs that were coming along, because they have stuff about a lot of things like if we what would you say if we could plant dimes in your brain, and over time your brain will reproduce more dimes, you know, or we have genetically modified apples that grow feet on them so that the apples can fall to the ground and then they can walk themselves to the store and stuff like that. And it's so hilarious. So that's one reason I love it.
Uh-huh.
And then also just hearing, because it is from that time period, it feels it's a snapshot of how people talk like that and how they thought. I was reading an interview. Mal Sharp said most people, they just weren't used to people on the street anyway. So having a microphone, they got away with a lot of stuff because just people were excited to be around technology and, oh, this is for the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, now I feel like any weird thing that happened, people, you're at some point going to go, am I in a prank show?
Of course.
You know, you're going to start looking for lipstick cameras and all these things. But then it was just so innocent. But the stuff that they're doing is really, the premises are really sophisticated and kind of devious in a way. It's so great.
Dark. And I love that. I think that my favorite of the ones that I got to listen to, and I listened to as much as I could today, was they've got an Englishman.
Uh-huh.
Who's visiting the city.
Yes.
And they're telling, well, we'd like you to come. Will you come into this basement with us? There's a secret society that is permitted to not only hunt and kill weird wild game, but also people.
Yes.
And also we eat them.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, they build up to it. It's in the name. It's in interest of culture, you know, different cultural rituals and things like this. And one thing, there's a line that I love that starts from there. It's like, now you would go into this area. There'd be birds. There'd be birds of prey flying around. There'd be eagles. There'd be condors. And then there'd be a water tank with sharks. You would have an armband identifying you as a non-combatant. And so this guy, and the guy, he sounds like a sketch. He's like, well, I don't like that at all.
Yeah,
you know, he sounds like a character actor doing these things. It's so great.
Yeah, well, that's why I almost didn't buy it. But then there are a couple moments like, oh, no, he's performing for the mic, but he's legit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these are, like, that's the only difference is that there's a microphone there. So these people are putting on enough of an air of intelligence, which is where the magic comes. That's the only reason they're sticking around anyway.
Yeah, because they do. That's a good point. They present this stuff in such a way. They talk really fast, so their people are kind of thrown off guard.
Yeah.
But then they sound really intelligent, you know, so they'll use bigger words to sort of like, in the interest of scientific inquiry and the betterment of man, you know, so immediately people are like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and they have this, and they would wear suits and, you know, they looked legitimate. And they lay out this premise, and I think, I'm pretty sure that they didn't have things fully fleshed out. Like, they would just kind of have a rough idea.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of hear them start to go off in these different directions. Like the British one that you're talking about, I don't think they started with the intent of this is going to be a cannibalistic ritual.
Right.
You can hear them build up to it. And you can kind of hear the two, Coyle and Sharp, get excited about, oh, yeah, and then this happens and this happens. And I remember that in the 90s, as an improviser, I was like, these guys, they're doing all of this just naturally.
Yeah.
You know, and then their marks are kind of perfect straight men. It's a great example of how to play a straight man, even though these people aren't doing it.
Right.
And another thing they do is they'll get people to repeat the premise.
Yes.
So they'll say something like, well, I don't want to do that at all. You don't want to do what? I don't want to go down to a pit and fight for my life. You know, like it's so smart. And so I was so happy to go back into it this time.
And that's like, and that's actually kind of the, it could turn mean. And the only way it would turn mean is if like they were trying to get them to say, I will do this.
Right.
They just want to see as far as they could push them. Yeah. And that was the thing that stood out to me too, is like these guys, I mean, you don't hear of these guys as like, hey, you know, this guy taught at Second City way back in the day or studied at Second. These guys are just two motherfuckers who are just so, like, clearly good at parties together.
Yeah.
You know, who are like...
And even more, even better, because there weren't people, you know, there was no other reference for this, really. They met in a boarding house in, I think it was in New York, and maybe they met up in the Bay Area later, but in their 20s, and they were just the two wise-ass guys that did bits, you know? And... It's so I don't know enough about it, but they kind of came from that subversive beatnik-y kind of comedy, which is at the time was subversive, but it wasn't me. You know, there wasn't, the edge was more just sort of questioning society. It wasn't making anybody look really ridiculous. It was kind of overwhelming them with ideas that are already sort of out there.
Yeah. Well, and it's, for instance, in the one with the English guy, they're like, well, you know, we're members of this organization. So they become the assholes.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly fine for them to do. And they love that.
Yeah.
I don't know. The joy of that is just delightful.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't hurt that, you know, if you pick today two guys who are real funny together, the two funny guys at the office, those are the two most obnoxious assholes in the world. But at a time when not everybody had the option to go out and be famous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I do love that that actually paid off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. So like they eventually got, they would just do these pranks on their own, and somehow it got to, they were able to make an album, and then they, the album I think didn't do well, and they sort of stopped what they're doing. But then the station manager of this radio station said, I'd like to hire you guys. So they would be in San Francisco doing their stuff, had bigger ambitions. I just found out that they were hired specifically to prank San Franciscans, but they were in the process of trying to get a pilot TV show in LA. So they would leave San Francisco, they would record, let's say they'd be on the Santa Monica Pier, and they say, we're here on Market Street in San Francisco, and they would just do whatever their prank was, so they could do their hustle, and then drive back up to San Francisco every week, hang out a little bit, so it seemed like they lived there, and then hit the road and go back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And then the TV show didn't work, and this is where it gets, one thing that was interesting to me is, so eventually the radio show went away, and the TV show stopped. And I think Mal Sharp was ready to keep going, but Jim Coyle just disappeared. He and his wife, Mal Sharp was calling, and couldn't reach him. And he somehow contacted another mutual friend and said, they left like a week ago. They borrowed our luggage and just disappeared.
Holy shit.
They moved to New York, Jim Coyle and his wife. And then eventually he moved to Europe and studied philosophy and music.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he just was done with it, which I think is so interesting. Because when you listen to this, he's sort of the funnier of the two, you know, which I always find that interesting with teams. Not necessarily that one's funnier than the other, but there's a lot of times there's one that's truly a weirdo and then one who is able to kind of keep them contained,
sure,
you know, enough to probably, I'm sure that Mal Sharp was the one who's like, hey, let's go talk to these station managers, let's go. He was sort of the Mick Jagger, and the other guy was, and Jim Coyle was the Keith Richards, you know. And apparently Jim Coyle, before he met up with Mal Sharp, he was a benign con man where he would just lie. He had 140 jobs by the time he was in his mid-20s, because he would just bullshit his way in and just try it out, because he, you know, a guy who was ahead of his time and a little probably too smart for all the other stuff.
Wow. God, and it makes you, I mean, you can do all the conjecture you want, but it makes you wonder if that's what lost its pizzazz for him, and he wanted to settle the fuck down and become a philosopher.
Yeah. Or he could have been, he knew he was smarter than other people and
also
pissed off, and it's like, well, I'm wasting my my energy on these people.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, for somebody like, you know, myself, like somebody who's very passionate about comedy, mm-hmm. the idea of just dropping it as a thing yeah. blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering who those, because the only other people I can think about that I know of who did that are like Dick Gregory,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know, who left for a bigger cause.
Sure.
You know? I'm curious about that.
I'm sure there are others, and I know that they've come up in discussion, but off the top of my head, I can't. You
right,
know? Especially
right.
to leave the other guy just blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what blows. So I love, by the way, that you're coming with to me with all this information, because I didn't get all of it. So Mal Sharp then does?
He became the man on the street guy. So he would do
just
a lot of commercials.
Okay.
And he was sweet. He didn't really prank people so much. He was just a very personable guy. And I think of him as a Bay Area fixture. I guess he...
Yeah.
He did, you know, a lot of local commercials and mm-hmm. would do radio stuff and stuff for baseball games and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm finding here some of the titles of their stuff, of uh-huh. their bits. Selling Germs Wholesale.
That was good.
Maniacs in Living Hell. That's one of my favorites. Where basically the premise of that is he's like, they say, I'm here on the streets of San Francisco with a local entrepreneur who is introducing people to possibly hire them. What is your name? Oh, my name is so-and-so. And so the one guy plays like, sir, I've created what the job is you'll go into a pit. There's a fire. There's a constant fire going on in this pit. There are bats flying around and you have four maniacs who will be trying to give you physical harm. And the guy's like, okay, all right. Sounds interesting. It's so great.
That guy can't be budged.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing about it. And also, I love the use of the term maniac that is just completely unqualified.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, no, maniacs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're fine with that? And how will you fight them off?
Yeah.
And he's just, well, I might do this. And the thing, the best part of the bit for me is when they say, "And would you be comfortable eating the bats?" Well, yeah, sure, I'll eat a bat. Yeah. And you'll cook it yourself. Oh, I don't know if I could do
that. Yeah, that's where he draws the line.
Everything else is fine.
Well, yeah, and there's one where the bank robbery one where they get this guy in the Navy who, and again, he sounds like a sketch character because like, sir, what's your name? My name's Jim. How do you do? You know, that kind of stuff. And he's this dude that's in the Navy, and they start to talk about, would you like to be in a movie? I would like to be. I would like that very much. Here's the premise of the picture. And he's just playing along because these people are acting like they're authority figures. So he's saying what he thinks he's supposed to sort of say, and he's excited mm-hmm. to maybe be in the movie. He's like, that sounds like a wonderful picture, a bank robbery picture. That sounds great. And they get to the point where they say, okay, let's go right now. And he goes, what do you mean? Let's go right now. We'll give you a gun. You're gonna go into the bank. Well, hold on now. Well, so you just said, this is the other thing that I love is they will get, whenever somebody starts to sort of back away, they get not angry, but they get upset. It's like, but you just agreed, you know,
yeah.
You just said you'd do that. Well, that was before I knew that, but you know,
it's just beautiful commitment to a premise.
It really is.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. That's so good. So, all right. So you first heard them a little under 20 years ago, maybe 20
yeah.
years ago. What is it? Just a thing, like you said. You say you remember sharing it with your comedy friends, but you're not 100% sure now.
I remember it was going around the yeah. UCB community.
Okay.
I think for me, one of the other things that I liked about it is, I don't know if I, when as I was going back listening to it for this podcast, I feel like it made me realize that one of the places I got my love of just premises is these guys.
Okay.
You know, because they have just ridiculous. It's a big idea, and then they start from there, and then they just see where it goes.
Yeah.
And I realize I really in improv and writing I like that too. Of mm-hmm. you know, the whole sort of saying funny things versus saying things funny.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and I love them both, but like saying funny things has always really appealed to me. Like that more cerebral kind of. What about this thing? And the other is. Kind of making fun of current day society. So they have this other one where they throughout all their bits they do a lot of stuff related to this made up country called Bulgaria.
Uh-huh.
And they play Bulgarian folk singers. And you know, in the 60s all the college kids were into folk music.
Sure.
And different cultures, and you know, you could draw your parallels today. So they go to, I think it's University of San Francisco, and they do a concert,
mm-hmm.
and it's ridiculous. It's terrible. The music's terrible. Their accents are really shitty, actually. But you can just imagine people getting all excited, you know, being on the edge of the seat because they're being, you know, hearing these Belgravians for the first time, and they're going to tell their friends about it. And they're kind of making, they're essentially making fun of hipsters, which, you know, is who wouldn't
it's
like
timeless.
That?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that's, this has probably come up in this podcast a lot before, but I love audio stuff where the audience has to fill in the blanks. That's part of the fun.
Sure.
Is just imagining what they look like, what's going on the street around them or in the room that they're in. Oh, this is the other making fun of society. They go into an art gallery and they do something where they say, they do something like, we're sound interpreters. Oh, okay. They talk to this woman who owns a gallery. If you'd be amenable to it, we'd love to for you to describe a painting to us, and we'll give you the sound interpretation. And so she's like, "Okay, well, what you got here is a pasture." And it's so neat.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of beautiful. I like that. At the same time, we've got these two guys who are of an older generation who have the opportunity to make fun of hippies, which was nothing new, right?
Right.
Necessarily. But they're doing it in a very fun way, obviously not mean, but they also are doing the way you're describing it and the way I'm hearing it is this just weird, it's kind of avant-garde for being two straight sounding white dudes. You know what I'm saying? I say straight sounding, I mean straight as in straight edge. But it's pretty fascinating.
Oh, it gets really cerebral. Like the another thing I realized that I don't know if I got it from them, but it's probably why I liked it, is it is very kind of sci-fi. Like there's one bit called Sandor 21. So they just go up to some guy and they go, "Sandor 21, do you copy?" And he says, "What? Sandor 21, can you repeat that phrase? Sandor 21. All right, Sandor 22, Sandor 22. All right, you're in phase 8. Well, what is this? Would you like to be in phase 8? Well, I'm not sure." And so they
holy shit.
They get into that. They have one called something like they try to sell somebody a pronoun or something like that. Or they make up a word like, "Do you understand what's going on? Well, I'm giving you that word. That is yours. That is yours to use." "Well, how am I supposed to use it?" "That is up to you, sir. That is your word."
Holy shit. Yeah. That's so good.
Just hitting all these levels, you know.
I don't know why there's that level of surreality mixed again with these two normal looking dudes in suits. What you were talking earlier about the saying funny things. How do you sell that for you anyway? Or what's the best way to sell saying funny things? Is it? I mean, it sounds like they're just keeping straight faces, but there's something else to it.
I think it's I think it's that it's like there's a level of confidence and there's some gravitas, you know, that's another one of like, one of my favorite things is you treat a ridiculous thing seriously, you know, and that straight faced kind of, air that you approach something with that then, cause people will, I think, automatically emulate that. They'll match your body language. And I, by the way, I don't like pranks. I can't do pranks. I get uncomfortable when I watch them.
Yeah.
This one doesn't make, for some reason, these guys don't make me uncomfortable, but watching prank shows, even like a Borat, which is brilliant, I get so uncomfortable.
Sure.
But the I guess it's the confidence, you know, of having a ridiculous premise but doubling down on it.
Yeah.
Is so satisfying somehow.
It's interesting too, because if a good prank, quote unquote good prank, is going to escalate.
Yeah.
And but it gets to the point where the reaction becomes upsetting in the same way that it would also upset me. These guys are escalating, but at the same time, just making people more curious. That's the worst it seems to get to.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what the magic is there, what the calculation is.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It is the confidence for sure.
Yeah. That makes me think of there's another one called something like Animal Orchestra. Did you hear that one?
I heard half of it.
They get, and I think this one's British too, which for some reason, it's always a little bit better when they're not from the United States. But this woman is, they say something like, "Ma'am, if we told you that there are people playing wild animals like orchestra instruments, what would you say to that?" "Well, would you be for that?" "No, I wouldn't." "Why not?" "Because that's cruel." "What is playing animals like orchestra instruments?" "Well, what if we could take you right now to see some?" "Well, yeah, I'd like to see that."
That's what killed me.
Yeah.
It killed me. Her curiosity was undying.
Yeah.
Even though she
Because it is, like you said, it's like, well, it is, it's an, I would like to see that.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of, beautifully raw of like, I don't condone it, but I would like to see it, you know?
Yeah. Do you think, what do you think this sounds like today? Transplant it to today. The streets of San Francisco, 2017. A, could it happen? B, how different is it?
I think it would be very different for a lot of different, I mean, what it makes me think of is playing around with technology and sort of plausible premises based on what the sort of breaking news or scientific trends are. You know, I was thinking that what would be the equivalent? It'd be probably something like, you know, we'll give you a free iPhone eyeball. You know, we're going to transplant an eyeball into you. You can get internet. You can get that's probably going to happen at some point in maybe even in our lifetime.
Absolutely,
so
sure.
I could see people believing that that's a thing and then getting, depending on where you are, let's say if you did it in San Francisco in near Silicon Valley, people kind of getting excited about that possibility, you know, but so much of it would be, so much of it would be hard to do because people are just more savvy, you know?
Yeah.
That's what struck me is it would be about technology or, you know, things. Maybe it would be something about, like Mars travel or something like that.
Because I kind of want to see it happen.
Yeah.
I think you and Jesse Thorne just go up to San Francisco for a week and just do this. Actually, it's not a bad idea.
That's not a bad idea.
do you, out of all the bits, do you have an absolute, is there an absolute favorite? We've already touched on it.
I think the brain piggy bank is one of my favorites.
I did not hear this one.
That's one where he says, if we put dimes in your brain.
Okay,
because the guy, again, is a perfect straight man. He's like, what do you I can make more money playing pool, man. Why would I do that? Because eventually he goes, they get to a point where they say, we'll put dimes in your brain. And it's such a flimsy payoff for such high stakes. Like, there is a possible danger of your death, but sir, if after 2 months, you'll have $3. Well, that's ridiculous. Well, what if we put silver dollars in? And then he's like, that's crazy. And the guy, and again, playing straight man, he's like, but your head's going to fall over. And he goes, no, he said something like, we have a stick that we put under your chin. And then he goes, sir, I don't think you understand what you're turning down here. We're going to put silver dollars into your brain. They're going to multiply. And then you get to keep 20-30% of that.
Oh, that's delightful.
I love that one. I like the pharmacist. They go into a pharmacy.
Oh, God,
and,
yes.
And they basically said, sir, first of all, let me say I'm not a doctor. Okay? It's like, I'm going to operate on my friend here. Wait a minute now. I'm going to operate on my friend, and he's got a pain in his chest. I'm going to go in there, take a look around. I think I can fix it. And then they're off and running, you know? But the pharmacist is, he's so concerned, you know? He's so like, this is a terrible idea. Listen, the repercussions to you, the legally, and you could kill this man. He's like, well, I'm not going to sue him. You know? He's my friend. He doesn't want to hurt me.
He's got a do-it-yourself book or some shit. It's just like all the details.
Yeah.
They feel fully prepared, which if they're not, that speaks way more to their improv skills, which is, God. And that just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That these, and also it's another, your pick was almost possibly going to be Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Another one of the same era, this homegrown, like, I fuck around at parties.
Yeah.
I'm known for this.
Yeah.
It becomes my thing.
Yeah, the kind of the smartest weirdo in their group.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was reading that Newhart's album was one of the things that made it possible for these guys to get a record of like that sort
makes
of
sense.
Newhart, I don't think was necessarily subversive, but it was a little bit different and cerebral than, you know, the typical stand up. Cause it required just a little bit of imagination of like, okay, so he's on the phone, but he's not on the phone, you know, that kind of thing. And it was hip. I guess it would be, I don't know, the equivalent of I don't know, like almost like a Mitch Hedberg-y or somebody who's more
right.
Slightly out there than talking about their life necessarily.
That's true. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. Which Newhart were you going to pick? Button Down Mind? Was that the one you would have picked?
I think it was Behind the Button
Behind
Down
the button
Mind
down
because
mind. Okay.
I like them both, but I own that one. And I remember in college I got that used somewhere. And I love I love the ideas in there. And again, that sort of snapshot. I think he has something about Sputnik and some of the Russian scientists or the German scientists. But also just the Bob Newhart overwhelmed man kind of thing, which is very, I mean, gosh, so many people, obviously Ellen DeGeneres and, but also Louis roommates with, like, you know, those moments where Louis is just kind of like that look on his face when he's dealing with, this is the fucking world that I'm in. Like, what? Come on, I'm trying to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And Newhart has such a great way of playing that, somebody who's just like, I'm just trying to get through my day. I'm just trying to, you know, and I really have to tread lightly with an idiot or I don't know. It's interesting. I really like it.
You know what's interesting to me is that the two albums you're bringing up, you're saying you heard later in life than most people talk about. Normally it's like, I heard this when I was 10 or 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Is there anything like when you were younger in terms of comedy albums, or were you mostly a TV kid?
No, albums were biggies. Probably the same. I mean, I'm 46, so a lot of the same stuff that other people, Steve Martin, of course.
Sure.
Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie Murphy, you know, Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo, all those sorts of things. And then there was another, I got into, I'm blanking on his name right now. Chris Farley's friend, he makes David terrible Spade. Movies now. And
Adam Sandler?
Adam Sandler.
Okay, sure.
His sketch albums I got into late.
Sure.
And I love them. Mm-hmm. They're so funny. They're just straight sketch. He'll have like a song here or there and maybe a stand-up clip. But a lot of it is just his SNL friends just doing bits.
Right.
You know? And again, like real simple ideas. I bet you it sounds like they're just kind of riffing. They're not super meticulously written. They're just kind of going off. And you can hear them having fun. Not that they're breaking, but that they're excited about that. There's that one where they go and talk. There's a talking goat. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
This goat that's tied up all day. It's just these kind of like stoner kids are like, yeah, man, it's over here. It's a goat. Yeah, look. Hey, what's up, guys? Oh, shit. It does. It is a talking goat. And it's this goat who you find out who just wants to party and hang out, has a terrible life. He lives outside of the shack of this old man who beats the shit out of him all the time.
Somehow, and this is nothing against Adam Sandler, but your description is the most refreshing version of that because I've heard it a million times.
Uh-huh.
So somehow you describing it makes me want to re-listen to
it. Yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of people suggest it, but since we went all vinyl, I have at the very least been able to avoid it. And I say avoid it only because I've had to listen to it a bunch for the show.
Yeah.
Previous to that. But yeah, somehow that makes me want to revisit it. Did your parents have comedy albums in the house?
No, not really.
No. Mm-mm. It's all you.
Yeah.
You had to discover the shit on your
own.
Interesting.
And my friends, like, we would go and listen to my friend just recite Steve Martin's first record.
Sure. You know?
Although, you know what? Actually, I take that back. My parents did. They had the Steve Martin album. Mm-hmm. I think they got that first. Yeah.
Something they let you listen to or no? Because it's a little adult.
They let me listen to
it.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. For better or worse, they were, yeah. I remember that cat was the best fuck I ever had. I was like, whoa. But I think they appreciated mine and my brother's intelligence enough to get why that was funny. You know, why that was such a good switcheroo, you know.
So have you since discovering Coyle and Sharp, is there anybody else that, other than your buddies at the time, anybody else that you've ever ran into has said, hey, have you ever heard these guys or anybody you've ever talked
about?
Not
really. No.
They're very niche.
Yeah, they are very niche. That's why hopefully if people listen to this, they'll jump on it and spread the word. Because it is, you know, it makes me excited too because I'm not an audiophile. What would you call these comedy audiophile? But I like the idea. I'm sure there's other weird niche people out there like that. And it'd be cool to hear what those other regional things are.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, I haven't met that many people that know about it. Jesse Thorne, of course.
Sure.
Probably because it's a Bay Area thing. Matt Walsh, and then yeah, I'm sure they're out there. But I just can't get enough. I think it's so funny. And you know, it's interesting because you do hear in some ways. maybe why they didn't, because some of their stuff is better than others, and some of their premises are very close to some of their others, where they were, you kind of get a sense of like how they're running out of steam. And part of, I guess, why it's enjoyable is because it is not just a snapshot of a moment in time, but in and of itself, it's a moment in time of like, that's maybe that's what these guys had, is 3 years of
that's true,
brilliance.
Yeah.
And then they kind of went their own way. And it wasn't just that some nefarious big, you know, corporate interest, you know, it's not like a musical band where there's stories about they just gotten eaten up by the business. Maybe it's just these guys had that and then they went off and did their own thing.
That's a good point. You know? Yeah. And I wonder, I also think there's some of the longevity of it seems to be that the difference between what they do and a prank is a prank, there's no question. Yes, if you smash the back window of my car, or apparently I know I would be pissed.
Yeah.
In this, you're like, I wonder if I'd react the same way this guy did to that information.
Yeah.
You know, you're very much along for the ride because you can laugh at them. It's like, but I might take these guys seriously.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's challenging. Like, I mean, like even for the best, like if there's, have you ever seen, it's a weird question. Have you ever seen good interactive theater? I'm wondering if you've ever seen any that's, I mean, improv is that. I mean, it's to a degree.
Yeah.
To a degree.
I think I probably have. I've seen more bad interactive theater.
I bet.
Yeah, I actually, I have some friends in New York. They don't, they're not together anymore, but they used to do site-specific theater. And so, like, they would go to the Lower East Side Tenement Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was one of my first acting gigs in New York, is the Lower East Side Tenement Museum. They put on a Halloween show. So, at each room of each floor, there was a different thing. And it might be an interpretive dance, or it might, mine was a storytelling thing of, like, different immigrants. It was very just out of college.
Uh-huh,
it wasn't funny. Different immigrants telling stories from their ghost stories from their homeland.
And okay.
Then those guys would put on some pretty cool interactive things. But, you know, most of that stuff just makes me, I can appreciate it and I might steal ideas from it, but being a part of it makes me so makes me so tense. The idea of like, oh, please don't talk to me. And then you're like that kind of Ren Faire sort of like,
sure.
And you, sir, like, oh no, don't do this.
Whereas the difference, pardon me, if you're on stage for improv, is you are here for me.
Yeah, but also with improv, you're not really like necessarily grabbing an audience
exactly,
member and
right.
You know, doing that streetmosphere thing with them. You know. But yeah, that's why there was that spate of prank shows, and there'd be auditions for these prank shows where you would have to go out into the, you know, they would, I guess they would record you, or I don't know if they would, but you would have to go and prank people and like, can I use your cell phone? And I would just get so nervous, like, I don't like doing it, because I always just think about the other person, like, especially in New York.
Yeah.
It's so hard to live there anyway, and just to be the joke be that you fuck with them. That's the opposite of Coiling Sharp, is it's like, you know, there was a show Boiling Points at the, which, you know, a lot of great people were on, and it employed a lot of improvisers, but I hated the show because it's just about making people angry. It's just how quickly can you piss them off, which is just like, ugh. Come on.
You're bringing nothing good into the world.
Yeah.
So you did audition for a show like that then?
Yeah,
oh,
several.
God.
Up until the point where I just said, no matter how badly I want or need a job, I'm just not good at this. It would kill me.
Yeah.
But I actually did one show. It was Brian Husky and I and a couple other people did a show where parents would prank their kids, and it was based on a British show. So the parents would leave for the weekend. And somehow, while the kid was out, they would set, you know, hook up the house with all these cameras, hidden cameras, and then they would just see what happened. And then they would introduce crazy things, you know. So like,
okay.
One time we were, oh, they were selling the house, so we came as a priest, a rabbi, and a voodoo priestess, and because the realtor said, oh, there was a murder in this house. Did you know that? And this 15-year-old kid's like, I didn't know that. Well, we can perform this thing. You have to tell us right now, though. We don't have time to hear from your parents. There's no charge. We can perform an exorcism, and that will increase the value of the house or something like that.
God.
So we go and do this thing with the kid. And then there was one where we're dressed as prisoners and we have to go in and do, I was a landscaper, and it was one of the guys in it, one of the actors in it was, I'm blanking. He was the cousin of some famous SNL guy.
Uh-huh.
Tracy Morgan. It was Tracy Morgan's cousin.
Okay.
And so they're dressed like prisoners in orange jumpsuits, and that's they're the ones that perform the yard work and stuff like that. But you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So there's that, and I don't think that show, nothing ever happened with it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember a funny story where they said in the British version there was either a show or the pilot of the show or something, but where they first set up the cameras, they went away, and all the kid did is jack off all over the house.
Oh, no.
Of course. Parents leave, and he's like, oh, I can jack off on the couch. I can jack off over here. I can jack off on the stairs. I can do that. Which, can you imagine that kid?
Oh, that's fucking shameful. Yeah. I mean, for you, you would feel horrible. Oh, my God. Yeah, well, there are the dangers of pranks, kids. Do it like Coyle and Sharp, too. Give yourself, 10 minutes and out. Mm-hmm. That is the other thing, too. It's like they're quick. I mean, for the most part, they're quick.
Yeah.
They do seem like with the pharmacist, they let it go for as long as they'll go.
Yeah.
At no point do you, a couple you hear them say, I'm so sorry, a couple of them you do hear them say, this is a joke at the end, because they feel like, well, maybe it's time.
I love it, because the way they do it is so time specific and innocent too. They're like, can I tell you something? What? This is in the interest of humor.
yes, it's true. That is how they say it.
This is for humor purposes. Yeah.
God,
I think the only one of the other sort of prank things that it reminds me of, just because it's sort of like, well, how would somebody react in that situation? And speaking of Tracy Morgan, is that, remember Fear Factor?
Oh, yeah.
That show made me so uncomfortable. It's one of the only prank shows I liked, because it was fascinating to me. You know, when I'm watching horror movies and stuff, I think, how would somebody react?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how, and I feel like that's the closest example of what we would how people would react.
Yeah,
I mean, if they saw a monster, if they, you know, it's really great.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe that's how we could find out whether or not Carrie Elwes was overacting in the first Saw movie, because I always wondered that myself. But then again, I've never had to cut my own fucking foot off,
right?
So, you know, it
right.
seems a little
yeah.
So did this, did Coyle and Sharp lead you to anything specific, other kinds of comedy? Did it like flavor your sense of comedy, or is it just nice to have it there?
I think it flavored my love of premises, mm-hmm. and the sort of going down those sort of technological sci-fi-y kind of rabbit hole in things. Definitely sort of influenced when it, just improvising how I play a straight man.
Okay.
You know? Restating the premise, being indignant, and also just responding naturally,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think it influenced me in more, not in the sense of I created this product because I listened to these
sure.
guys,
yeah, yeah.
but it influenced just my writing, I think. And,
okay.
Conceptual, leaning more towards conceptual stuff as opposed mm-hmm. to, like, let's say a Robin Williams, who also influenced me, but I would say he's almost more say things funny than he is say funny
sure,
things.
Sure, absolutely. You know?
And I love that stuff too, but that the way that these guys can create such a visceral world just with their ideas
mm-hmm.
as opposed to their voices. 'Cause again, they do these French accents. They're terrible. You know, they're not good. And that's part of the charm of it.
Yeah.
Too.
You do feel sucked in no matter what. And you do feel very much like you're on the side of the person who's there. But again, they don't feel victimized. It's just like, it's a really solid gag. You know, you're talking about doing the learning how to play straight man. And then I was thinking, because I'm a huge Parks and Rec fan. So every time you played, I can't remember his name, but your character.
It was Mike somebody.
Yes, right. Yeah. So Mike somebody. He's a bit of a straight man, but like, he's so, it's this weird, like, they've placed a Fox News anchor in a local town, which I absolutely love. What is it? I can't call it a straight man. What the hell?
No, I don't think he was a straight man,
right?
because the people that he would interact with would play the straight man.
That's
of like,
true, right?
You're honestly going to be, you know. you know, if I'm confronting Leslie Knope about something, she then gets to be the straight man.
It's just so unusual, I think, for a TV anchor character to be that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's pretty interesting.
That's what was great about that show, though, is that it was almost, you know, it's like The Simpsons, where everything that exists in the outside world can exist in this town, you know? And they have their small, their Pawnee version of that thing.
Yeah.
Which makes it bigger and smaller at the same time.
Yeah.
In a really great way.
That's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
God. It looked like a lot of fun to watch.
It was a blast.
I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I like to do is, we didn't pick a specific album because I fucked up, but let's just say Coil and Sharp as an entity, what's a good reason to listen to these guys if people have never heard them? Let's assume they haven't.
What's a good reason to listen to them? I think because one is that because you haven't heard of them and because it's old, it makes it's exciting to know that this stuff has been going on forever.
Yeah.
It's like, I just rewatched, Sunset Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you see an old movie and you're blown away in a really naive way of like, they had these ideas.
Right.
Then.
Yep.
They were discussing these things then.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you realize that in a way, even though one of the reasons I like it is it's a more innocent time. There's an aspect of it where it's like, it's not innocent. We were never innocent. It's like people are people, you know, there's always funny weirdos doing bits and that's very reassuring. And you know, it's just really funny.
Yeah.
It's just on its own, really entertaining and really funny in a way that is, I feel like it simultaneously makes you work harder because it's just audio, so you're kind of filling in those blanks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just a real simple, they're kind of, the idea of it is very simple of like, we're just going to go to normal people and introduce ridiculous ideas and see how they react.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, again, because you haven't heard of it, it's that sense of discovery, and where there's not much of that these days, I feel.
That's
like.
That's absolutely, you know? True.
Even researching these guys is not, there's just not that much information on them, which it kind of makes it more exciting. You know, we, in this day and age where there's, you only have to wonder about things for 10 seconds before you can look it up. It's kind of cool that there's a little bit of obscurity left where, you know, I'm sure there's more digging to be done, but, it's not immediately accessible. The story of these guys.
Sure.
And it makes it that much more exciting, you know.
It's more interesting to me, and it makes me definitely actually want to have them on vinyl. It
is
like one of the things that I like, but it also is a very good example of, if you know, if you're a collector like I am, you're always on the lookout for regional stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like to blanket, but most regional stuff sucks.
Sure.
And it's because it's not, but I don't think these guys were intending it for a specific regional audience,
right,
though, either. They weren't performing in clubs. So
right.
I don't know. I think it's got a lot of reach because of that.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. And I wonder if because it was for the radio, it makes it a little bit more universal.
Maybe.
You know,
that's a good point.
As opposed to, I don't know, if it was just clubs, it would have been a different thing.
For sure.
Yeah.
I do not know when this is going to come out, so I apologize.
No
but
problem.
Is there anything to promote? Anything's coming up?
Yes.
Where can people find you?
Well, speaking of audio, I have this thing called the Seth Morris Radio Project on Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Stitcher Premium, to be exact. And it's a parody of terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a sketch album in podcast form.
Awesome.
There's three episodes. And if you go to stitcherpremium.com/Seth, and enter the code Seth, you can listen to the first episode for free.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good. Where are you on Twitter?
At Seth is Morris.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. I will, whenever this is coming out, it'll at least be in this year. So if you guys go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, I'm trying to listen to a comedy album a day. By then, whenever this comes out, I'll have caught up. And go to lookingforwardmovie.com to see my mockumentary that is slowly but surely becoming an actual movie. It's you don't have to watch all 183 videos from last year. You can just wade through whatever you like. And that is about it. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Check out Coil and Sharp. You're going to love it.
Yes, please do. And thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.
A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.